WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And I'll also remind you that we simulcast on 1460 AM WBMS in Brockton. We want to thank you for tuning into the show this evening. We got a fun lineup this evening. Very informative. Of course, this hour we'll do the State House report as we will speak with Rita Mendez, State Rep Rita Mendez. She will join us representing the 11th Plymouth District, and we spoke with her prior to getting sworn in. Well, here we are. We're in April. Let's see where things are for the new state rep. Hour number two, we are going to speak with the folks from Massasoit Community College as they are going to be putting on Haley's Comet. It's a new musical that's being put together. And we are going to speak with Cameron Torres and Eli Bigelow, and they'll give us the rundown on that. And then we're going to also learn a little bit about the Valedictorian Project, and we're going to find out what that is all about. It is a mentor program that actually was birthed out of a report. The Boston Globe did an article, and the details were that there was not enough opportunity for families, especially individuals who were having success in high school, and they were getting ready to graduate, and they were the first ones in their family to go to college. They did not have sufficient, mentors, folks to help them. Those tough questions, your first year of college, what to do when you get overwhelmed. Well, we're going to speak with a couple of individuals. We're going to speak to a mentor and a mentee. And Donald and Lou are going to be our guests, and we're going to find out about this valedictorian project that Brockton has been using and has deployed, and it's successful. But we're going to kick things off this evening with our first guest. She is no stranger to Monday Night Talk. She is Mary Waldron. She is the executive director for the Old Colony Planning Council. Mary?
Good evening, Kevin.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are such a busy person. I swear I saw a couple of things on social media that you had a chance to be in the State House chamber last week with a good friend of ours, Josh Cutler. A lot going on. The purpose of our conversation is to talk about something that I believe that the Old Colony Planning Council does every so often, and that is do a long-range transportation plan.
Correct.
And I think a couple of weeks ago, there was something called Vision 2050, the future of transportation. Plus, we also want to apprise folks of an ongoing corridor study. This is for Route 18. This is right around the Bridgewater. So we're going to touch upon that. Let's jump into, how are you doing?
I am great. And don't let all those social media posts think, you know, like I'm duplicated or sort of modeled out there. Thankfully, there's not too many Mary Waldrons out there. Everybody would run away. But we are, as at Old Colony Planning Council, just for those who don't know, we are a regional planning agency. There are 13 of us across the state, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And we do everything from economic development planning, environmental planning, master planning, but also our focus today is about transportation planning. We have a staff about 22, but moreover, I want to talk about the makeup of our board. There are 17 communities from Easton, Stoughton, all the way to Plymouth and in between. And we have a delegate and alternate from each of those communities. So just giving a scenario, we are a full board, and many of your select board members and or obviously representatives from your community come and we meet once a month. So every month we present a staff report that is like 18 pages long. And I'm always like just gushing because the work that we're doing, and we're here today to talk a little bit about our transportation. So with that, there was a webinar that is on our website, which is oldcolonyplanning.org. We record all of our meetings, and they're uploaded to YouTube. So we have to plan. We have to plan for the future. What's development looking like? What's proposed? What can be proposed? What can't be proposed? And if anybody's been in the Orlando area and you try to go from one exit to the next, you are in traffic for an hour.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is crazy. We don't want that. That's not good quality of life. As you mentioned last week, I was at the State House an hour and a half to get from Brockton to Boston. I did drive, not take public transportation, but I had some other things. But we have to plan for that. What the Transportation Department at Old Colony Planning Council is doing is the joint, it's a long-range transportation plan. And there's conversations. It's talking about educational, right? Access to jobs, access to education. And what are we doing about it? So it's not just, it's not just cars. It's Brockton Area Transit, GATRA. It's also bicycle. It's pedestrian. It is also using, for those who may want to take the red line, it's all of that. It really is important that they're all working together, but working with economic development and the communities. So there is an overlap between transportation and a plan of a community. We have many who have diverse, so some do not have a lot of commercial, and then there are many that have an industrial park. So we want to protect the livelihood and the quality of life that the community chooses to have, and we want to work with them. So we work with Mass DOT, we work with the planning office of the different communities, we work with the DPW, police and fire, and we collect data. I should say I went out once with my staff and do traffic counts, and I will tell you I have the utmost respect for them because it's a lot to it's an actual bug.
Tedious.
It is tedious, but it's that critical data that's important that does go into a portal for Mass DOT, but it also goes and working with the police department. So we work with that so we're able to protect, but also remediate some of those issues, whether it's a roundabout versus a four-way stop, or whether it is slowing and doing some things that are within the road that can slow traffic down that people are not going, 50 miles an hour in a 10-mile zone. So all of that stuff gets put in here. We are still in the process. It's a public process that's still open. Again, go to our website. But the idea, again, is to get input from various stakeholders. That means residents, businesses, public officials. We want to hear from you, right? Transportation doesn't necessarily sound like a sexy topic, like, lots of different things. But it's so critical, and that's our job. We're collecting that information. We're collecting the input. We'll be doing some further outreach to the communities before we close it. And being here today is an important way to getting the word out. So, go to our website, oldcolonyplanning.org. Look for that transportation, and if we also have a newsletter that we're always constantly putting information out.
When we look at a long-range transportation plan, do the numbers, for the traffic counts, is a lot of the data that you've had maybe for the past 20 years, is that something that's figured in and that helps to project what we may see in 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now?
It's part of it, and interesting, because COVID has uprooted all of us. We all thought at one point that traffic did obviously slow down and halted almost completely. Mm-hmm. And then we saw the numbers. So we do track all of it. We track the numbers of, you know, people speeding, right? There was during COVID, there was a whole study about how people were going 20 miles above the speed limit, and not just only the highways, but elsewhere, because there was nobody out there. You can go a little faster. 20 years is probably not what we go back to because of the different roads, but definitely 5 years. And we do track that, and we the staff does analysis. I mean, I'm just going to go through, if I could. Charlie Kilmer is not only deputy director of Old Colony Planning Council, he's the transportation program manager. Then there's Bill McNulty. There's Ray Garino. There's Guochong Lee. Then there's Sean Bailey. I know I'm going to list them, but there, Sean Bailey, and then Kyle Mowat, and then Andrew Vidal, who's the GIS. And all they you take all that data. We also work with our economic development team to understand what's the proposal. We are constantly receiving notification from the communities what they're planning, and we all sit together and we kind of do this analysis and do a projection. So 2050 still is a hard thing to project. We are in the year 2023, but the conversations really are looking maybe more for 2030 and then looking at 2040. And the hope is that by 2050 that we, you know, we hope that we are able to protect the natural resources that we want to. We want to direct development and work with our communities, direct in development where they want it. And then we should, through good planning and good conversations, that's where all that all happens.
Does the state somehow get involved with this information? How much of this information do they receive, and do they figure into or factor into any of the monies that they are going to give and mutual local aid that they give to the communities down the road?
That's a really good question, and it's absolutely, it's all comes together. So again, MassDOT, and we have a great relationship with our state legislators, so they know there's a program called Mass Build that we put in any development that we think that is coming or that has happened. We put it into this portal, and magically there is this algorithm that it happens that we're able to kind of project what, but it's in a place. So everybody's talking to each other. So it's not transportation talking separately. It's not economic development, Secretary of Economic talking separately. They're all talking together. And that helps. That not just helps the region, right? Because if you build a large development in one town, the impact, particularly in the state of Massachusetts, is going to have an impact on its surrounding communities and the region, right? I know I brought up Orlando because it's just so prevalent, but we do not want to have backing, you know, we don't want to see traffic backing up on highway. That's only an accident waiting to happen. So we want to know how to flow and how to make things happen. And sometimes, you know, we have places like Westgate Mall at you know, that is constantly still a challenge, but they have revised that two or three times already. It may even need another revision. But that comes with, right, before more development happens at Westgate Mall, what's the impact on the, you know, accessory roads?
It's interesting you mention that, because I was going to bring up, you know, several years ago, there was a conversation regionally about maybe another casino in the area. And the thought was, is that Brockton was one of those That's leading cool. contenders. Yeah. And they were neighboring communities that were looking to be figured into any kind of impact, especially if it came to monies that they would receive, that it would be remediated in such a manner.
That's right. It, again, you know, action has a reaction.
Correct.
Life itself has that. But now take that into your communities. So we are always keeping an eye on that. Anything, you name it. You know, I sit on the nuclear power decommissioning citizen advisory
panel. NDCAP.
NDCAP. That's much easier to say. and knowing, I mean, huge impact, right? Not just only on the waters and but also the impact of anything of how that gets to be developed. So it's that's where we work with the communities. And to the communities, many of them do not have an economic development director. Many of them don't have the capacity, and they have the brilliance and they have the know-how, but how to put that forward. And you talked a little bit, you alluded to it. There are state grant funds. There's a one stop where in order to get in funding, you have to make sure you have a master plan or work on a master plan. So the state now is working with the regional planning agencies, that's working with our communities, and we're there. We, as a regional planning agency, we have some absolute outstanding staff to work with our communities about water protection, business retention, but also to, again, that planning and transportation planning together.
Ken, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with the great Mary Waldron. She is the executive director of the Old Colony Planning Council. And we're getting a little bit of an update from her in regards to a recent webinar that was held. And also to kind of ask you, if you happen to be somebody who lives on Route 18 in that particular corridor, the Bridgewaters, there's an ongoing study. So can we talk a little bit about that real quick while we have you?
I would love to. Again, all this information is on our website, oldcolonyplanning.org. But this came from an ongoing. This is not something new. This is really about maybe 15 years, if not more, in the making. And so if anybody has gone into the intersection, particularly right where the school, and it is just, it's dangerous and confusing. And so the town, Peter Spagone, select board member. And East Bridgewater, thank you. Mm-hmm. The East Bridgewater community and the Bridgewater community had approached us and saying, what can we do about this? And so we can't just do it with one community, because it has, again, to the point that it has a residual effect on other communities. And so having, you know, engineering and timing of lights and things like that. So there has been, it's called Road Safety Audit. We, the staff goes out and not only talks to stakeholders, but we bring in the state, bring in DPW, bring in police and fire and others. And they literally, as a group, walk various locations and identify the concerns. Once that's done, then we also take the data that we talked about, traffic counts and the like, and bring that into the equation. And the staff will pull together a report. But simultaneous to that report, we are also launching a survey. And the survey is going to be open until June. So if you're going to the East Bridgewater or Bridgewater town meetings, there will be, the survey will be available, information there. We might think our staff is going to be at both of those, you know, to take the survey and give us feedback about what you feel and how often, you know, do you want to walk through an intersection? I know I wouldn't, but not right now, but with some changes to it. You know, you have a school that's across the street from a commercial. Like the businesses would like to have people come and visit there, but they're not going to cross a street. So we're going to have this survey, and it's available online as well on our website. But it's to, you know, and it's not just only for East Bridgewater and Bridgewater residents either. It is also for people who go there for either their work or for their school. We have Bridgewater State University in the center of town, and how does that all factor
in?
It's very active, right? It's its own town unto itself. So when you get that kind of impact, particularly during a school year, it just doesn't impact Bridgewater. It also impacts East Bridgewater. So the Route 18 study is so overdue, and the communities, both of them have been tremendous. Mike Dutton, the town manager in Bridgewater, and then Charlie Seelig in East Bridgewater, really working closely with us. And again, this is an ongoing. I would love to come back and give an update.
Indeed.
I would not have me give the update, because the technical aspects of it are, I think, are going to be important. But I have someone from our staff come and just do a deeper dive as to the results about the next step, so everybody knows about what's going on.
Oh, because I was going to ask you. So once you have compiled this data, once folks have shared their input, then what? What's the next step? So folks know that, okay, this is what's going to happen next. So I got to make sure I get my information to them and share my thoughts.
So we present the report. So we did one in Brockton recently, and I went before the traffic commission. So that's in the city. But in a town, it would be presented either to the Board of Selectmen and or whoever at a public meeting, however we want to do that. And the report gets shared, and it's made available. And so the report comes in a couple stages. The least financial impact, right? You want to be able to... some recommendations that aren't very costly. And then there's another level that is a little bit more costly. And then the last is things that we know that are going to be very costly in terms of, but that's where we also come in, where we can assist with their application for One Stop to get state funding or federal funding now that's available through the by the infrastructure bill, the federal infrastructure bill. So the next steps really are to give that report, hear some feedback, really fine-tune some of the costs. We want to be able to give as much of that information. So if you are having a special town meeting, if you're having a town meeting, to incorporate those costs into whether it's information that's needed from the town.
You said the federal infrastructure bill. Are you talking about the American Rescue Plan Act, or is it another piece of legislation?
It was a separate piece of legislation just about infrastructure that has to deal with not only roads, the infrastructure that, but it's also cable. I'm not saying internet is what, you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
telecommunications.
Yeah. And, there was a separate bill that was dedicated just to that. All kind of the bigger package of federal funding, but it was really split off to deal with. We knew that piece of information to help with the roads, and other aspect to make our streets safer and more livable, right? That's what we all want, to be in a place. Most of us choose where we want to live.
That's true.
And when we are there, we want to make sure that we have, whether it's for our children, our grandchildren, our family, ourselves, to be in a place where you can take a bike out, you can breathe, you can have access to public transportation.
Yeah, you want the best quality of life, if possible.
That's exactly right.
It's what we all strive for, right?
It is. Who knew that transportation would be so much fun to talk about?
It connects us all.
It does.
They say. Well, it's been great having you on. We just got about a minute and a half left. Anything we haven't touched upon, I haven't asked you, but you want to at least to mention to the folks, or maybe there's something that we've talked about and you want to just kind of reiterate?
Well, I would probably need about a week's worth of time to talk about all my staff and what they do.
You're very proud of your staff.
I am extraordinarily proud, and we make a great team. And, we should talk again. I know it was on one of your previous shows. We talked about the MBTA communities, that in itself, right? But we are working Dottie Fuginetti, who is select board, chair of the select board in Easton. She's on our staff. She's been working with the various communities to work through that. They're able to protect, again, their what they want to do within the communities, but also get to the level that they can get some funding from the state.
You know, you mentioned the MBTA. They've just recently hired a new head of the MBTA. And I know that the administration of Healy and Driscoll have made the woes of the MBTA of public transportation a key or top priority. Are you going to, the Old Colony Planning Council have a chance to interact with this new head of the MBTA, or is it some of the other individuals that will be hired under him?
No, I think we're going to have a lot of interaction. There is the MBTA Advisory Committee. Many of the towns that have MBTA stops have a representative on that committee. At our next Joint Transportation Committee, we're looking to have the MBTA. There's an opportunity to. So just a quick piece on that, because there is a bottleneck from particularly on the Lakeville Middleborough line that has the South Coast rail that's coming through. Well, if you get to the JFK, there is a bottleneck that holds up trains, and you can't, it's not a 30-minute ride in anymore. It's more like 45, and for people who have timeliness for jobs. So there is a public comment, and we'll be taking that up at the next Joint Transportation Committee.
She is Mary Waldron, Executive Director of the Old Colony Planning Council. She has been our first guest here on Monday Night Talk, and first of many visits that she and her staff we'll make regularly here on Monday Night Talk to keep your traffic flowing and make sure your communities allow you to get from point A to point B fluidly.
Oh, that's a nice little tagline. I'm loving this, Kevin. Thank you. And I thank you again for having Old Colony Planning Council here on your show. And to your point, we plan to have more visits with you.
All right, we are going to step aside, and when we come back, the State House Report with State Representative Rita Mendez. Just a moment. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And joining us for this segment for the State House Report, I think it's her first one, because previously when she was on, she was yet to be sworn in, but she is now up at the State House working diligently, working in the district, still working as a city councilor in the city of Champions, Brockton, Massachusetts. It's busy for Rita Mendez, who is a state representative for the 11th Plymouth District. Representative, how are you?
Hello, how are you? It's always good to be here with you, Kevin.
So let's talk about what has the past 3 months been like for you since you raised your hand, put your hand on the Bible, and swore that you're going to be a great state rep?
Yes, and I know that for people that watch the state representatives in the legislature process, they always complain how everything takes so long at the State House to pass, how bills just nothing ever happens. And I am telling you, when you walk in, you have no idea what expects you, how many different directions you're being pulled, and how many people want to meet with you. And it really is something.
So where are you at this particular moment? Because since we talked, you've had a chance to get acclimated to the bill filing, or maybe you're a co-sponsor on some legislation. I'm sure early on you were in the bullpen where all the freshman legislators all kind of congregate until they can find you a space somewhere in the State House. They move things around. Where are things at for you here this, you know, first Monday in April?
Yes. So finally, the end of March, we just got our office assignments. So now we in that process of moving out of the bullpen, and they are kicking us out very quickly because they need that space for committee hearings. So they want us out for that. So finally got office assignments. So we're all super happy that we're moving out of the bullpen. Is amazing, but super chaotic. We have lobbyists, advocates, people just walking in, and they just go directly to your nice folding table, and there are a whole bunch of them, 10, 15, 20. They have speaking roles. They're all ready to go, but they forget to tell you that they're coming. So you're always with unexpected guests, and you're trying to figure out who they are, which organization. You're trying to be polite and listen to everybody, but not much really gets done because you're just being pulled with all these different things that happens daily at the State House. Having an office, it's so much quieter that I'm worried that why is it so quiet in here? So I'm happy to be at my new office.
Now, who are you? Who are some of your peers that are in? What reps are you currently congregating with in your office?
So I'm not on the transportation committee, but they did put me in a transportation suite, which is right next to the judiciary, and I am on the judiciary committee. So it's nice. If I have transportation questions or issues or concerns, I'm right there, and it seems like something that we all have questions at this point. I haven't really met all of the reps in there yet. We all have different schedules. We're in the district different days. We're literally still in the process of moving in, but I feel I'm in a good place. And that is the same office that Jerry Cassidy first got when he first got elected as a rep. So I feel there's something good there. It's like, okay.
Yeah, because Jerry Cassidy and Michelle Dubois and State Senator Mike Brady are part of Brockton's legislative delegation. It's kind of nice that you're somewhere where Jerry Cassidy used to have his office space. What has it? Now, I believe that recently that the representative, House of Representatives, I think there was a supplemental budget passed. What was that like? And was there anything in it for your district, or what was some of the particulars that you recall that are in the supplemental budget?
Something that we're really trying to continue on is the universal free meals for kids in our schools. That is very important because we find it it's so much easier if parents, they don't have to fill up application. So we want to continue that. We wanted to increase it going forward in the next budget season so that to make sure all kids in the public education do get that. And another thing also that I'm really working on in Brockton is regarding our Chapter 70 funding. So the governor just put out her budget regarding that. And I'm still trying to understand that because now I'm on this different part. It's different when you're a counselor and then you work. But now that I'm at the state that I can actually do something regarding what actually comes to the city. So I'm more interested in that. So they go by low incomes group and Brockton fell on the 11 group and it goes up to 12. So the 12 is the highest. So we get the highest amount of dollar numbers per each student in our school system. And in order to get in group 12, we need to reach 80% of that low income percentage. And Brockton reached 79.59%. And speaking with the school superintendent, Mike Thomas, he said, we are short 69 students and we have more than that in our shelter systems, but they failed to fill up this application because their parents are undocumented and they are afraid. And now we're short $6 million coming this next cycle for our school systems in the city of Brockton. So that really raised a red flag for me because it's much harder once it's been appropriated to go back to the leadership and say, oh, by the way, give me $6 million for our school system because of X, Y, and Z that happened. But this is a snapshot that happens in the month of October. That's when it's by the number of students in October. So now I'm really working with our school systems to do tours in our school systems, really build that reputation and that trust from parents because I happen to be an immigration attorney. So that coming this October, we can ensure that we hit the right number. So we are afforded the right amount of number for our school system when we're not short next $6 million coming the next cycle. So that to me is insane that it happened, but I've been doing these tours in our schools departments and starting that conversation to really move that along, make sure it doesn't happen going forward.
It's worth noting of folks who may or may not realize this, but you're a Brockton City Councilor. You are, I believe, an at-large councilor, which yes. means that you're not just serving a section of the city, but you're like, you know, you're like the mayor, so to speak, where everybody from any part of the city can come to you with an item or an issue and say, I'm dealing with this. Or, you know, again, you sit on the city council. What has it been like working up at the State House, attending meetings, at City Hall on School Street? Has it been an easy adjustment for you?
Yes, I think the two of them actually go along very nicely. It's important for me to be at the local level, understanding the everyday issues that the city needs, and then be at the State House advocating for that. So although it's very busy because I'm learning a lot of things at the State House, at the same time, it's really a huge learning curve that we're there. But when I know so well the issues that we have locally, it helps me advocate for my city. And when I say, by the way, I'm a council at large and I'm at the meetings, I'm hearing this, this is the funding that we need, these are the things that we should be addressing, they'll listen. They're like, okay, so what do we need? What can we do? That really helps. And it will continue when I am no longer the council at large because I built that relationship with the other counselors, built that relationship with the mayor, with the department heads. So I feel they'll still continue to come to me and say, hey, remember when we were having these issues? It continues. We need more funding in this area. So it's a nice combination. I don't think it really hurts in one way or another. It really helps.
In the governor's budget, her fiscal 24 budget, one of the items that has been included in there, and that is for schooling for folks who are over 25 years old, who are able to, the funding will allow folks to be able to increase their education via community college, knowing that there is a community college in the city of Brockton. What are your thoughts on this initiative? And do you think it's something that is going to bode well and be in the final budget that is signed into law come late June, early July? Or do you hear rumblings from your colleagues who are like, going, can we afford this? Is this something we really want to do? Or this is a great idea?
And this is the perfect time to address that because of the millennials tax. So additional funding is to go to towards education and transportation, two needs in our state that is immensely required. So I'm super excited about that. I've been speaking with the president of Massasoit, DePasquale. I'm on the foundation board at Massasoit. I am an alum of Massasoit. I did go to community college and then UMass Dartmouth, so public education. I attended all of it and I know how important it is. And I was at Massasoit when other students were talking about this proposal and how it would greatly help them. And I even filed a bill that goes a little bit further, that to say if they are Brockton High graduates, they live in the city of Brockton, they should be able to, or the charter school or the vocational school, the Brockton schools, they should be able to attend Massasoit free of charge for tuitions. And that involves in a much larger conversation to build that equity gap. We are a gateway city. We need to really be ahead and preparing our students in the workforce, in the workplace, and allow them that opportunity to attend community schools, community college. So I am going to be advocating for that, and I'm going to even be pushing that in Brockton. We really think our kids should be able to attend Massasoit free of charge. And that we have a community college here, and I hope that other gateway cities would be embracing that and welcoming that, so they could also be doing that in their parts of the state as well. So I'm excited for that.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with State Representative Rita Mendez, also at-large city councilor in Brockton, joining us here talking about everything that she's been enduring since our last conversation just 3 months ago. She was getting ready to be sworn in, and she's providing us a little bit of an update. I want to stay on the education note for another second here. Do you suspect that the community college could be something that, if it's successful, that maybe the state might embark on a special program that would involve a four-year degree, or maybe something that would involve state institutions to provide that additional education when it comes to the workforce?
That is essentially the goal. I feel we have to start somewhere. So starting at the community college, at least that provides 2 years of free education. And we already do it with our high school and also the charter school, because they have the dual program. And I'm meeting with the students and they are super smart. They're super excited. By the time they graduate with the high school diploma, they already have an associate's degree and they can graduate for both. How amazing is that? I didn't have that opportunity when I was in Brockton High. But even if I did, I don't really know if I would be able to take advantage of that, only because I was attending Brockton High School and working full time. So it's really hard when you have to work and also go to school. So not everybody that is attending our Brockton High at this point, maybe even if they really want to go and attend Massasoit, be able to do while they're also doing their high school program, because if they still have to work. So it would be amazing if we can continue that. Okay, I graduated from high school, but still allow that kid, that student, to attend Massasoit and get that associate's degree. From there, then if they want to go to a four-year school, at least they've got 2 years already included. So it's much affordable and accessible. And the ideal is public education should be public funded. And we're changing that. We're transferring more and more to the students. So the tuitions are increasing more and more every day.
We have just a couple of minutes left. I, you know, when I was setting this up and getting ready for us to have our conversation tonight. I told you it would go fast because there's so much to talk about. I have 2 or 3 minutes left before we have to exit out of the first hour. Anything that you want to kind of touch upon, let the folks know who are listening, especially the folks who are listening to our Brockton station, 1460 AM WBMS. Anything you want to touch upon real quick?
Yes. Want to talk about small businesses. It's one of my passions too. And we are working on a bill to codify micro businesses because during the pandemic, there were grants and benefits and assistance to small businesses in general. And the bigger companies that have 20 employees, 30 employees, they have attorneys, they have accountants. So when it comes time to get benefits and grants, they are ready to go. They've got everything in order and they get qualified immediately. Our moms and pops in the city of Brockton, You tell them, okay, this grant is based on your expenses for this term, and they are running a business, but they're not putting in any expenses on their tax return. So there's a problem there. So they don't qualify. If we codify the micro businesses and send funding directly to that, separate the two, we will be able to assist our small businesses. And I love to come back to talk more about that because that is super exciting.
Just quickly, what were you able to, there's over, I'm sure, 6,000-7,000 bills that were filed early on in the session. Is there one or two or a couple that stick out in your mind that you are involved with that you want to at least remind folks to support and contact their representatives to make sure that they are signed on?
Yes. So this one for micro businesses is something that we'll be providing incentives to our small businesses, micro businesses that hire people that has just been released from incarceration. So if they've been released within the past 5 years, they'll be able to hire them and train them for the workforce and be able to get a grant. So they will be able to train them. And also people who are in transitional assistance, if they're welfare and you hire them, then you also get grants in order to train. And that helps our community, helps our workforce, and helps our society and our city. So looking forward to work on that more.
If anybody is tuned in and they're listening and they want to reach out their constituent, how can your constituents reach out and be in touch with you and your aid?
Yes, I'll give you my cell phone number. It's 508-577-0083. They can call, they can email, which is essentially rita.mendez@mahouse.gov. And I will be happy to reach out and talk to them.
Well, Representative City Councilor, we will look forward to talking to you again in a few weeks just to catch up and see how everything is going with you and not only in your district, but in your city.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You got it. That does it for hour number one of Monday Night Talk. Wow, it went fast. Coming up, hour number two, we're going to talk a little bit about Halley's Comet coming this Friday and Saturday to Massasoit Community College and the Valedictorian Project, very special project. We'll give you more details in just a few minutes. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WAT.
My name is Tom Casey, and I'm a parishioner at St. Christine's in Marshfield. I wanted to let everyone know that St. Christine's will be preparing and delivering Easter meal kits for those in need in the Marshfield community on Thursday, April 6th. If families, individuals, or businesses are interested in volunteering, donating, or learning more about the program, please call 617-270-6054. Again, that's 617-270-6054. Happy Easter.
A message from the Hull Life Saving Museum. The famous snow row has been rescheduled and is back on Saturday, April 15th. It all starts with a meet and greet at the museum the night before from 5 to 7 p.m. And then the big race on Saturday at Windmill Point in Hull. Check-in begins at 9 a.m. and the one-of-a-kind Le Mans start is at noon sharp. For more information or to buy your ticket, go to hulllifesavingmuseum.org.
It's time again for the Fourth Floor Artists Spring Open Studios. Come out and celebrate our 30th anniversary with us. Saturday and Sunday, April 29th and 30th, from 12 to 5 at the historic Sandpaper Factory, 83 East Water Street in Rockland, Mass. For a preview, visit fourthfloorartist.com, on Instagram at Fourth Floor Artist Rockland, and on our Facebook event page. April 29th and 30th. See you there.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to the second hour of Monday Night Talk right here on 959WATD. And we have a really cool conversation that we're going to have right now. You know, when it comes to finding ways to succeed, it's not easy, especially if you were going through grade school, high school, depending on the community you grow up in. There are some communities that are more fortunate than others. We are actually going to talk a little bit about a program that was actually born out of a 2020 Boston Globe article in regards to cities like Boston, Brockton, Lawrence, Worcester, and some of those high-achieving students, valedictorians, who, you know, want to have the best, but sometimes not necessarily enough is there to help. This program, the Valedictorian Project, is designed to have mentors in place. We actually are going to be speaking with a mentor, and we're going to speak to someone who is being mentored or a mentee. Joining us right now, we have Lou Jacobs. He is a mentor born in Brockton, a 2008 graduate of Brockton High School, but has gone on to do great things, as well as Donald Simprius. Donald is our guest, and Donald right now, I believe, is a first-year student at Providence College. Gentlemen, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Let's start with you, Lou, and that is, let's talk a little bit about yourself. Give a little bit of a background on yourself, what you have been doing since graduating Brockton High School, a three-sport varsity athlete who has been doing great in the world, but would it be easy enough to say that you wanted to give back to your community?
Yeah, absolutely. Brockton is a special place for me. It will always be my home. And anything I can do to give back to that community, I'm more than happy to do. So just a quick background on myself, born and raised in Brockton, Massachusetts. After that, did a postgraduate year at Phillips Academy Andover before heading to Amherst College. I majored in history and played football at Amherst College, where I captained the team my senior year. Had a lot of friends who were going on to some, work on Wall Street, work in finance and consulting and kind of the gig there. But wanted to do something different with my life. So decided that I was going to give my go at becoming a Navy SEAL. So went back to Amherst College, coached football for a year while I trained. I was 250 pounds, couldn't run, couldn't swim when I graduated. So I certainly had my work cut out for me. But what made me believe that I could do that was there was two mentors of mine who were also Amherst College alumni that were SEALs. And I kind of just hitched my wagon to them and would call them and text them whenever I had a question on something. I was relentless. And Pat and Rob kind of know that and know who they are. And can't thank them enough for, they were open books. They would call me, they'd answer a text at midnight if I had one. And so was enlisted in the Navy in 2015, did 6.5 years with SEAL Team 4, two deployments with them, decided I was ready for a change of pace, left the Navy in August of 2021. I signed on with a family office, Jack Shields, it's now called Shield Health Innovations. That led me to believe that, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to be involved in, either early stage investing or a little bit later stage. And so decided to get my MBA. I'm currently a first year student at Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management, and will be interning at JP Morgan in Boston this summer as an investment banker.
Well, congratulations on striving and continuing to grow your career. I want to touch on Donald. Donald, first year student at Providence College. What are you majoring in, and what has it been like to be mentored? Do you have a mentor that you speak to regularly while you're in college?
Yeah, so currently I'm a freshman at PC. I major in biology, and I picked up a minor in French. So starting with this major, I knew that I would need a lot of support. So while I'm happy that there's academic services, having a mentor is great to reach out when, you know, you do feel weak and you feel like you don't have the answers to certain questions, such as like what professors expect from you, or like just general self-care when you're in college, because you are going into a new environment where you're living with someone else, and you know, you have to make yourself comfortable. So I felt as though having Lou, and I do also have a mentor, Lauren. She's my peer mentor, and having the accessibility to contact them is very helpful for me, including like just reaching out for either self-care or academic advice.
So Lou, what was it like when you were first paired up with Donald, and what have been some of the calls that you kind of illustrated that you had peers that you would reach out to say, I got questions. What are some of the things that you've been able to help Donald with?
Yeah, it's a great question. We talked a lot about, work-life balance. And not letting, you know, if you look at the goal that Donald has held, some pretty lofty goals. And if you look at the whole thing, sometimes it can be too much. So we, you know, talk about breaking that down into bite-sized pieces and focusing on the task at hand. I had a coach in college who would always say, win, what's important now? You know, what do I need to focus on right now at this moment in order to be successful? So talk about, you know, time management, knowing when you've, probably studied enough and is it worth, maybe like prioritizing sleep. We've talked about the importance of physical health and how that relates to mental health and performing academically. So supplied Donald with a couple of workouts, and I think he's been following them. I'm here to just be whatever I can do for Donald, however I can help out in any way, I'm willing to do.
Donald, what has been the most helpful piece of information that Lou has given you to date that you, it's still something that you beckon back to going, Lou's right. I got to make sure I do A, B, and C, or it's just something that's there with you when you're having a tough moment.
Definitely one conversation that I remember is I asked Lou how to manage my week. And for this certain assignment, I would always give it like almost like 5 hours of attention. And when he told me that if a professor is giving you like a reading and there's not that much time to read, they want to expect you to know everything, just know the major parts and the significant parts. So ever since I actually took out the significant parts, like it's reducing like my stress like so much. So every time like I get to an assignment, like a reading and writing assignment, that's what I think of, and it really relieves my stress. Yeah, that's one thing.
Are you both first year? Are you both first gen college students, or Lou, if you had family that's gone to college, same with you. If you'd had family that's gone to college, Lou first.
Yes. My dad's a graduate of Stonehill College, so. From the area, and got his master's from BC. And my mother also has her master's degree from Bridgewater State.
Ah, go Skyhawks, go Bears, right?
Yeah, there you go.
How about you, Donald? Do you have family members who've gone to college, or is kind of having Lou as a mentor been kind of that assist?
Yeah, so college, like, it's a really new topic in my family. You know, my parents are immigrants I'm from Haiti. So definitely I know like cousins going to college. So, you know, I can always like reach out for their questions. But definitely I feel as though the advice I get from Lou and even Lauren is like really secure and like what I can trust in.
Now, have you heard from anybody in your class, Donald, that has a mentor or does not have a mentor, and maybe you're kind of a mentor to them as a peer mentor?
And you would say in my class, as in
I'm
in
saying, PC? Well, no, I'm saying is some of your peers that graduated Brockton High School with you, how of all your friends and the folks that you grew up with, do you still hear from and you go back and forth in regards to going to college or living your lives?
Definitely. I have I actually have three friends that go to Boston University, and I do communicate with them a lot about like how I got helped by this program and how much like I love how PC has academic services to reach out and how there's so much community. So we do like go back and forth on how it is in PC compared to Boston University. And it's nice to see like the comparisons of like where you could have gone and how it fits into like how POC students might feel in a certain environment. So that's something we definitely discuss a lot over text or phone calls sometimes over the weekends.
Now, how often are you using some of the mentoring you're receiving from Lou and sharing with those individuals?
Definitely. I remember it's just once in a while, I would say. You know, we try to keep the conversation like short because we know we're busy. But I wouldn't have any specifics.
Okay. Lou, how's it make you feel to hear that Donald is as needed some of his friends and some that have moved on to higher education is sharing some of that information that you've passed along to him as a mentor?
Yeah, it's great. You know, everything to help the greater good. And I think having a mentor in life is a force multiplier. And if Donald can, you know, be that for somebody else, that's all the better. That's what this is all about.
How much do you each know about the valedictorian project itself, Lou?
Yeah. So I first found out about the valedictorian project while working in Boston last year, and when I heard that they were expanding to Brockton, you know, I raised my hand right away.
Yeah, my understanding is that the plan is for them to try to get mentors across different career paths. And I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's a tremendous, it's a tremendous goal. And I think it's something that's definitely worthwhile. I know there's a lot of very successful, more successful than myself, alumni from Brockton High. And you know, it's you know, it's helped. Like Donald wants to go into medicine, and I certainly, you know, my network, part of having a mentor is that, you know, their network is now your network, and so, you know, I pull on all my medical friends' strings. We talked about, you know, with Donald getting him an internship, and reached out to a doctor, that a family friend that I know. So hopefully we see some progress there. But yeah, having somebody that's in that profession and has, you know, kind of blazed that trail is extremely beneficial.
So if you're just tuning in, you are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, also simulcast on WBMS 1460 AM in Brockton. And our guest for this particular segment is Lou Jacobs. He is a mentor born in Brockton. And is doing extremely well. Did a stint with the Navy SEALs and is now moving on to bigger and better things and becoming a mentor, as he mentioned earlier, a candidate and attending now the Northwestern Kellogg School of Management. And also Donald Simprius, a first-year student at PC. And it sounds to me as though he is going to have seeking a career in medicine. What career path you're looking to go into. Are you looking to do specialty medicine, Donald, or do you want to just be a general doctor?
I actually want to become a physician assistant. I want to specialize mostly in like the ER, so trauma. I believe like that fast pace is something I want to get into because I have experienced it in like smaller jobs. So I think I would be able to handle it.
What are some of the challenges you've been facing, though, in your first year? And again, in anything in life, you know, the first year in college, a lot is coming at you at once. And I think, you know, we earlier on in the conversation, I think Lou kind of had mentioned is taking it a little at a time. You know, it's like a sandwich. You can't eat a sandwich in one bite, right? You got to take a little bites until it's all gone. What has it been like for you as far as the pace of school?
Definitely. I think I was being a little too ambitious. I remember I signed up for a lot of commitments, so extracurriculars on top of, you know, all these classes. And I found myself going to all these, you know, events all day and then going back to my room, and I have a load of work to do. So then it just decreases the sleep each night. And I had to call Lou and ask him which one should I delete. But I didn't want to, like, you know, betray the organizations, you know, the clubs on campus that I set a commitment to. You know what I mean? So definitely this semester, it did decrease, which helped me. You know what I mean? But I was definitely like so excited to like finally like be a part of many like different fun things on campus. So
okay. Anything sports related or strictly, you know, different clubs? Because that's the first thing, is so many extra, you know, curricular things to be able to do. Now, are you currently living on campus?
Yeah, I live on campus.
So that's another element. You're kind of free from, you know, your parental constraints. It's like, you know, you got to try to figure out what's going on. Was it the same for you, Lou? I mean, when you first went to school, and, you know, did you have to try to figure out what was best to call down the extracurriculars and focus on your studies?
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly a lot. I was put on my plate freshman year, and learning time management is a crucial key to success. I'm still trying to figure it out, but, you know, getting better every day.
Yeah. Now, well, you with a sports background, I mean, what were the three sports that you did? Football, wrestling, and track, right?
Correct. Yes.
Now, did you get a scholarship for one of those sports or all of them?
So I was recruited to play football at Amherst College. It's a D3 school, so no scholarships are on the table.
Definitely interesting. So going back to this particular project, the valedictorian project, if you were to say anything, Donald, in regards to anybody who may be getting ready to graduate this year, maybe might be in the top 20 in their class when it comes to their grades and are looking to go to college, I mean, what dividends has this program paid for you?
I definitely recommend anyone, definitely obviously in the Brockton area, but any other areas that they do offer the valedictorian project, to sign up, because as a freshman, college, you definitely need advice if you're like coming from a background where college isn't a general topic. So I feel as though for me, I've been helped, you know, a little bit financially, and I've been navigated through like getting financial aid, where like advice from the valedictorian project. Also, they've taught me a lot about like networking and like trying to find internships. They do have like a few meetings per month about those things, so workshops, and those do help you when you trying to navigate like your path. They also offer like this fellowship in the summer where they give you a stipend, and when you sign up for that fellowship, they help you find an internship where it might be unpaid, and they will help supply you with like a stipend so that you can like navigate to that internship or like navigate your summer expenses. So that is a tremendous help when you're trying to navigate through college.
Are there any other avenues that Donald has mentioned, Lou, that maybe you may know of, that the Valedictorian Project, which is a nonprofit organization, mind you, offers to mentees?
As far as like different professional support or career support?
Yeah.
Not off the top of my head. I'm sure they do. And they do a tremendous job of screening mentors and finding, a diverse set of backgrounds. So I think they do a really good job of covering a lot of different industries and trying to, pair up the mentee and mentor in the best way possible.
So I was going to ask you, how did you become, what was the process like for you to become a mentor? Was it an interview? Did you have to go did they do a background check on you? I mean, how did you measure up to become a mentor?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's an application process. I think there's two or three different interviews you go through, the background check. Whole nine yards.
No kidding. And I mean, how long is the process? And then what happens after? Once you find out, do you get like a letter? Do you get a phone call saying, hey, we'd like to welcome you on board as a mentor? And your first assignment is, how did that go?
Yeah. So I think I got a phone call from Amy, just saying like, hey, we think you're a great candidate to be a mentor for us. We'd love to have you on board. And then I think so that was probably a 2 month process, maybe, if I remember correctly, and that probably got accepted to the program in June. And then Donald, I think we got assigned to each other probably in August, right before the start of school.
So what was the first meeting like with Lou, Donald? What was it like to meet your mentor? And maybe I should back up a little bit here. How did you get involved with the Valedictorian Project? Was it something that you heard from the school? Did they seek you out because, you were tops in your graduating class?
Definitely. So I was reached out by my guidance counselor. She told me that because I'm top 20 of the class at Brockton High School, I could be like offered a position in this mentorship program. And what was the other question? I'm sorry.
The other question was what was it like when you first met Lou? What was it like to have those early conversations with him and knowing that he was the person that, you wanted to, to reach out to for post high school grad, for your college career? And maybe, maybe this could be a lifetime friendship.
Definitely. I was really excited because the first thing I saw was from Brockton. When he told me he was from Brockton, I was like, oh, like we relate so much. So I was definitely excited because I knew that he would know like what I've known. He's walked through the hallways that I've walked through. So I knew that like the advice that he would give me is something that like it would be tailored to what I need. So I was really excited to hear about that he's a former boxer. And definitely it was exciting to meet new people and know that there are people like on a that I can aspire to be, especially like if they do like they grew up in the same environment as me.
How important is that, Lou, to hear that from Donald, that that was one of the things that resonated with him, was that you were somebody who grew up in the city. So you're not just somebody, just anybody who's picked from any neighboring community. Ah, he's from East Bridgewater. He doesn't know anything about Brockton, something like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I said, Brockton will forever be my home, and anything I can do to give back to this community, I'm willing to do. And I think, when you do have a mentor that has, kind of accomplished some of the things or have the same experiences as you, and you're able to relate to that, it just makes it all the better.
Yeah, and I find it interesting, again, that, this was a program that started in Boston and is seeing resounding success. And it has, again, it's being something that is doing well in Brockton at this particular time. And it's moved on to Lawrence, Worcester, as I mentioned earlier. As we have a couple of minutes left here, anything that we haven't touched upon, but it's important to make sure the people who are listening understand fully about this program, the Valedictorian Project, and what it is meant to each of you and what it could also mean to someone else who wants to get involved with it. We'll start with you, Lou.
Yeah, I would just say, please sign up as a mentee or a mentor. This is a tremendous program. They're doing excellent work to give back to the youth of the city of Brockton and the surrounding neighborhoods in Boston. Please get involved and everyone can be a mentor. You don't have to be each person, no matter what you've accomplished in life. I'm telling you, there's somebody out there that it will look up to you and needs your guidance.
Donald, if you could, what would you like to say in regards to this program as to how it's helped you so far? And if there are individuals like yourself who are looking to, achieve in college and beyond, especially when it comes to a great career, what would you like to tell those individuals listening?
I definitely advise for any seniors in high school right now to have an open mind to any mentorship opportunities out there. You definitely can gain a friendship and networking along the way. And I really hope that in the end, you'll feel confident in yourself and know that you have the people around you that can help you be successful, because those that are around, you surround yourself around the people that you want to become. You know what I mean? So that's why I hope that the valedictorian can become that program for many other seniors in high school at the moment.
Well, I want to thank you both for being my guest. It's been a privilege to be able to talk to both of you, the pride that you have in the City of Champions, and that you're each of you are doing your best to make the city proud. Lou Jacobs has been our guest. He is a mentor with the Valedictorian Project. And Donald Simprius is a mentee, but I suspect that if he has an opportunity down the road, he will become a mentor. So, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for joining me for this particular segment.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You got it. All right, well, we're going to step aside just for a couple of moments, and when we come back, the final segment of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 W.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced Cancer Care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Invest your time in listening to CAPE Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. CAPE Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Balance 7 Dietary Supplement and Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15. Here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to the final segment of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Of course, simulcast on 1460 AM WBMS in Brockton. And we have a special treat for you, as we're going to be talking about a new musical, Halley's Comet. And so happens that we have two of the three individuals who actually have written this. And this is something that's going to be performed and put on Friday, April 7th. That actually is this coming Friday and this coming Saturday. Both of these, the curtain goes up at 7 p.m. We have Cam Torres and we have Eli Bigelow. The one individual omitted is Mikey. Mikey's not here. Mike, we wish you were here. Gentlemen, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Hello. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Let's start out. Tell us a little bit about yourselves. We'll start with Cam. Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, so I grew up in Fall River, Mass. Went to Durfee High School, did the whole theater thing there, and then went off to college at Emerson College in Boston. Got my concentration in acting. That's where I really began. But since I can remember, Eli and I have been kind of toying around with creating things our whole lives. We've been friends, and we're actually also cousins. Forever. And we always wanted to write a musical. And then we met Michael Malley, who is just crazy enough to push us to do just that. That's kind of the, in a nutshell. Yeah, Eli?
Yeah. I've known you since I was 10.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, at least.
Maybe at least 10. We've always been doing like films in your in your backyard.
Yep.
Or we've done theater together. We went to the same high school. My parents were the head of the theater department there.
So you had a leg up. Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
you did. But it's almost like being the preacher's kid, right? Because you're held to a certain standard.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, and I omitted this. I didn't have a chance to let you say something, Cam, but we'll stay with Eli for a moment. So what shows did you do? I mean, were you a lead in any of these? Or were you kind of like ensemble? I mean.
When in high school, specifically.
Maybe you did community theater. I mean, it all counts.
So my parents, my mom was a music director, my dad is a director, tech director. So they did a lot of community theater too. So I was kind of in shows starting at like 6 years old. I was in Fiddler on the Roof as a little kid. And so I was in a bunch of community theater shows for a long time, Oliver, and then, you know, I was always around it. I either went to rehearsals where my parents were they were the teachers at the high school. I would always be around watching shows. So I just kind of like stayed with it. And in high school, my parents wrote a musical, original musical, Alice in Wonderland. I was Humpty Dumpty in that. Mm-hmm. I was Bob Cratchit. I was Jean Valjean, and I was the Beast. No nepotism at all.
No. And you know, speaking of which, I mean, is your dad's name Gary?
Yes.
Oh, so he happens to be directing this, no?
He sure is.
It just kind of dawned on me. I don't know. Just kind of my notes in front of me here. Yeah. How about you, Kim? Some of the stuff that maybe you have you been on stage? Are you more of a behind the scenes kind of a guy?
Yeah, I did in high school. You know, I was in Little Shop. I played Oren. We did Rent. We were one of the first high schools in Massachusetts to do Rent. I played Collins. You know, a couple other, various different shows.
You played Collins. You're a pretty decent actor.
Yeah, you know, I know. Don't
pull a muscle, pat yourself in the back. That's okay.
You have to ask a few people. But then I went off. I've worked with, you know, Cape Rep Theater in Brewster. I've worked with various theater companies in Boston. Did touring Shakespeare for a long time. Yeah. But that kind of ended around the time of COVID, naturally. And I've been focusing more so now the last 3 or so years on writing. I had a play of mine produced in 2019, a solo performance piece called Don't Feed the Bear. And I've kind of been doing that, focusing more on all that since then as a playwright.
What's the difference between being the person who writes it as compared to someone who directs it or someone who has to perform it?
I think so. My experience was I actually performed in my solo piece when I did it, and I didn't get to enjoy it. as the writer. Because I was so involved in it as the actor, you know, you get really swept up in it and you're not thinking about all of the other pieces because you're just thinking about what you have to do in that moment. And we did our first reading of Hallie's this past January in Fall River, actually, and getting to watch the audience three nights in a row watch the show, react to the show, hear the words that we've written, the songs we've written. It was probably one of the greatest artistic experiences that I've had in my life. Just because nothing, it's like the only thing I can equate it to, and this is with zero experience, is having a baby. Is like your baby's walking, right? We've been working on this musical, the three of us, for over 10 years. And so getting to this space where we feel comfortable sharing it with people and watching it actually stand and not only stand but walk a few steps is wild. It's beyond our wildest dreams.
So what version would you call this one? If you've been working on it for 10 years, I mean, is it double digit? Is it triple digit?
It's definitely double digits.
Okay. Like,
yeah, we have done extensive rewrites of this. I'd say we're in the 20s.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And what is Hallie's comment about Eli?
I wish we had that blurb.
It's right here, baby.
Oh, it is?
Okay. It's right in front of you.
Look at that. Perfect.
Yeah. We take care of you here.
I'm going to go with what Cameron wrote because it sums up the show just perfectly. Got it right here. Yeah. The year is 1986, and Hallie's Comet is about to pass over the town of Huntersville. The town has pulled out all the stops for this spectacular wonder. As the town prepares, a young girl spends her night reuniting her parents, a teen scrambles to keep friends intact, and an elderly couple gets lost in the past. Through the mysticism of the comet, the park, and the night itself, moments from the past meet the present and guide the town toward the future as they embark on a night that is truly once in a lifetime.
Definitely an interesting concept. So are all these individuals seeing the comet at certain points in times, and we're seeing them in their respective lives as they're dealing with the situation?
Yeah, it's this big night where this fictional town of Huntersville, everyone's here. They're all, when we first thought about this, one of the things we said was all these people were experiencing something themselves that you could say happened once in a lifetime. And they're all there to see the comet for their own reasons, but they also have a more specific want. There's other reasons why they are there.
Yeah, and all storylines take place in 1986.
Yes.
And it's basically all three of these different groups on the same night experiencing the same thing. Mm.
Now, these performances this coming Friday and Saturday, this isn't just your normal play or production, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we're doing a concert reading of this. So we're going to have some minor production value. We're going to have, you know, lights and a full sound package. So it's going to sound great. We have a 4-piece band. Mm-hmm. And
you're doing the hits from the 80s, from the 80s too? What's happening here?
Some of the music is inspired for sure.
Yeah, some of the music is definitely inspired by the 80s. Yeah. But I wouldn't say it is a strictly 80s show.
We like to say the show takes place in the 80s, but it's not about the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not time-sensitive, kind of an evergreen type of a thing, but although it did take place in 1986.
Yeah.
I like it. Where did the concept come up with to be kind of a concert type of performance instead of it folks acting acting in this as traditionally?
I think it was really just because we felt that we wanted to really workshop it, right? Workshop the show because we think that, you know, it has potential. But in order for us to kind of get the feedback we need to keep working on it, we needed to kind of pare it down as much as we could, right? And do a smaller version than what you would normally see, like, on a big scale production-wise. So this concept version is more of, like, a workshop for us, you know?
Yeah, it's not a finished product yet. And we're constantly...
It's evolving, right.
That's right. So at the end of each of our readings, we did this back in January, we're going to do it again. We're going to have a talk back with the audience. We got a lot of great feedback last couple of readings we've done. We've done a bunch of readings when we first started out with this, but you know, we had a virtual reading during COVID, and that we of just Act One. And again, we asked for feedback. We got some amazing feedback that completely like blew our minds to go to a new place in the show. But that's why we're doing that. Yeah, that's why, and that's why we're not, I guess, going with a full production right now. It's just it's a work in progress, and we want to get it better and make it more clear and share our what we think this show is about to people.
If you are just tuning in, we're privileged to be speaking with Cam Torres, Eli Bigelow about Halley's Comet. This is a new musical. It's going to be taking the stage this Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m. Where, you ask? Well, it's going to be in the Brockton campus of Massasoit Community College. It will be in the Buckley Performing Arts Center, a fantastic venue if you've never been there before. The admission, $10. That's the admission. If you want to purchase tickets, there's still time. 508-427-1234. It's that easy as 1234. Or you can go online. That's what all the boys and girls and ladies and gentlemen are doing these days. Massasoit.edu/box office. Okay, you got that. I'll repeat it again if you just missed it. You're just walking in the room. It's okay. But again, it's going to be on the Brockton campus of Massasoit Community College, Route 27. I want to go back to your dad directing this. He must be very proud if he's willing to give direction on a piece that his son and his son's friends have done together. Son's cousin has done, you know, talk to me about that.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's said multiple times how proud he is about the project, and he actually is retired, he has talked about how he's been extremely excited about doing something like this. He read it and he immediately was excited about the whole thing.
So there's something that I hear now. So Cam, you're a co-director.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this until I looked at some of my notes here, and that is that Eli, you are a composer and a lyricist, and you're the music director for this.
Yeah,
astounding. That is fantastic. So how does it feel to know that, you know, did you compose some of this music? Most of this music? All of this music?
So I composed all of the music. Michael Malley and I are co-lyricists, but
score written by Eli Bigelow.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
To my Oscar.
It was good.
Hey, you know, Emerson did well this year at the Oscar. So.
So Mikey and I wrote the lyrics, but Cameron also in many moments also wrote lyrics with us as well. I wrote the music, and music direction is actually my main, is what I do for a living. A music direct for studio, the Capuchin School of Performing Arts in Bridgewater. Nice. Music direct semi-professional community theater shows. It only made sense that I would music direct this too. I've been enjoying that. Yeah.
I got to digress for probably about 10 minutes here, and that is I never had a chance to, did I ask you as to some of the stuff that you have participated in as an actor
we touched on it a little bit. Like I've toured in Shakespeare productions, things like that.
But what was your favorite though of everything? Is there a favorite or have you not had your favorite yet?
I'm sure there is. I always forget.
They come and go so fast.
I think about, I was in a production of The Wild Party way, way back. Andrew Lippa's version. And I played the role of Burrs in that, for anybody that knows. The guy's a complete psychopath. But that was just a ton of fun. And I think about that show a lot.
Okay. No, I'm looking at the cast. It's quite a cast.
We have a big cast, yes.
Yes, we sure do.
And now is this something that collectively you guys cast this locally here, or is this part of do you have like a traveling cast that are, and any time that you put it on, they're like, you tell me where it's going to be and I'm going to be there on stage for you?
It's a combo.
Yes and no. So when we started back, we had our first round of auditions back in December of 2022, and nearly all these folks came out and got the parts that they have. And then after our first reading in January, miraculously, after our opening night, Mark from Massasoit Community College was there and was like, hey, you guys need to do this in a bigger space. I'm going to offer you a bigger space. And we never believed that that could happen. And it happened. And, you know, unfortunately, some of our cast were college students and were on break. And so they had to go back to school. And so we had to fill out our ensemble again. And also we added, to our ensemble.
Yeah. Lost five, but gained 11. So
is that really a bad thing, is it?
No, it wasn't. Sure and so, yeah, so a lot of these folks are local, you know, to the Boston area and, you know, south. Yeah.
It's honest to see if now have you mostly stayed in the Fall River area when it's come to doing any performances yourselves, or have you had a chance to interact with some of the other, because there's so many theater groups on the South Shore. Not to forget also the Crown Jewel Company Theater in Norwell. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many theater companies.
Yeah. What's really great about this cast is like it's a myriad of different people that we've worked with in the past from different theater companies. It hasn't just been people from Fall River. Actually, we have people from shows that both Cameron and I have worked with in community theaters. I have a bunch of students from Cappuccioni, who is also
Cappuccioni's
part of
awesome.
This. So we've performed in Fall River, and now we'll be in Brockton. But the people that we're working with are from all over the place, which is really exciting.
So how long have you been rehearsing and doing rehearsals? Is this a traditional rehearsal that you do? You have the actors, the musicians come in for, you know, the a month, 2 months leading up to the big performance. Kind of talk us through the process, what it's been like, especially in Massasoit.
Yeah. For this one, we started in February.
Okay.
We've limited it to two rehearsals a week, really focusing on starting with the music, making sure everyone knows the music. Thankfully, all of our leads came back from our January reading, so we didn't really need to work too much with them. Which was great. Maybe some changes that we made. So we've done 2 days a week, and now we're starting. We're going into our tech week.
Tech week's always fun.
Oh yeah, where everything where everyone, hopefully we all know what we're doing, and we get the tech team. We can give room for the tech team to come in, and Massasoit is being extremely, extremely generous, giving us a lot of visual elements that we didn't get in our last reading. That's going to help tell our story.
Now, I would think that this is going to have a series of props. Do we have costuming? You have folks in period pieces. Are you still going to that, or is it just a matter of folks just up in a microphone?
Pretty much, it'll be folks kind of in concert blacks, but then with kind of an accent piece that expresses their character in some way. We want to make sure the audience is aware that this isn't a final, you know, production of any kind.
Sure.
This is a reading and this is a work in progress, but we want them to be able to really see what the three of us had envisioned is possible for the show, at least in this iteration, and then, you know, inspire folks to, you know, give us their feedback, you know, perhaps donate to whatever comes next, or if they're in the audience and have a place for us to do it next, you know, offer that as well.
Where are you hoping this evolves to? Are you hoping that this ends up being kind of a big Broadway production, or are you hoping that it can be taken to, it can be turned into a film?
I mean, Gaddy.
Eli? It's on you, Eli.
Oh, boy. I think we've had so many, we've had all these like small goals, right? First it was, we just want to hear it. Yep. We just want to read it. We just want to hear someone else sing it. We just want to do a performance. And now we've gotten this amazing, we want to hear it with a band. I remember that one of my dreams was just, I want to put on a show, that we wrote and us get paid for it. And that has happened. So that was a dream. That was a goal. And we've realized that, which is amazing. But I guess,
I would love for it to be done you know, professionally across the board in regional theaters, community theaters. But of course, I mean, we'd be crazy to not want to reach for the moon.
Right.
And try to hit Broadway in some way. You know, there's a lot of luck and a lot of crazy kismet that would need to happen for that. But, you know, crazier things have happened.
Again, if you are just tuned in, we are speaking with Cam and Eli. They are the writers, two of the three writers for a brand new musical, Haley's Comet. This is going to be, again, hitting the stage this coming Friday and Saturday, 7 p.m. show times. Tickets can be purchased online, massasoit.edu/box office, $10 for tickets. Again, this is going to be on the Brockton campus, Massasoit Community College, right off of Route 27 in the Buckley Performing Arts Center. If you've never been there, it is a fantastic venue, seats a little over 425. I think last count was like 430. And it's, again, there's not a bad seat in the house. And if you've never been on stage, it's a fantastic venue to be on stage and perform in front of. So think of how great it is for Eli and Cam and their group as they get ready to take the stage later this week. So as we went around the corner here and coming down the home stretch, we've got a couple of minutes left for you. Anything that we haven't mentioned or that we need to talk about in regards to this performance? What are you looking forward to as far as this night? I mean, is this the biggest venue you guys have been in, or is it similar to venues that you've performed this in?
By far, this will be the biggest venue that Haley's Comet has been in. And this venue allows us to reach the most amount of people we've ever been able to reach with the show. And so that's just exciting. And I'm very curious to hear, you know, we made some changes from January, so I'm hoping some of the folks that saw it back in January can come and give more feedback on the changes we've made. But I'm also really curious what new folks are going to think and say and what they're going to have to say. Because the truth of the matter is that this is a work in progress. And without that audience interaction and feedback, we're dead in the water. We can't continue on. We need to hear really constructive, thoughtful feedback.
Is the idea to capture these individuals as they're offering during the talk back at the end of, you know, the interaction with the audience, that maybe they might want to see future iterations of this to see if, in fact, you have taken some of what they have offered and somehow interjected into the newest version?
Absolutely. There are definitely folks that gave us insight in our last reading that if they were to come back, would definitely see their thoughts. Mm-hmm.
That could be a new concept, you know, right? It's just like, I mean, we've seen movies where they're like, oh, there's a director's cut of this stuff that's been cut out of this. So there was another, an alternate ending. Yeah. Right. What if it could be that, you know,
the audience cut,
the audience cut from 2022 or 2023. That could be a new concept.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
We save everything.
We do save it. I have every single draft we've ever had of it. It's a lot.
Really? But I mean, how proud are you? At least you've made it to this point. It's not something where you've like, I'm going to put it on the shelf and let it collect dust, and maybe I'll look at it 20 years ago. That was a good time.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely moments, for sure. Oh, yeah. There was a stretch there where Eli and I really didn't think it could go any further. We were stuck in a point with the show, and with the structure of it wasn't working. And we took about a year and a half, almost 2 years off. Yeah. And it wasn't until 2020 that Mike was like, guys, there's something special with the show, with what we're trying to do here. We got to keep doing it. And New Year's Eve 2020, or 2019 rather, the three of us met and decided 2020 is going to be the year that we work on it. And then kind of wildly, though, in a miraculous way, COVID happened and it stopped us. Life stopped. So all we had to do, was work on the show, which was kind of crazy.
Not really, though.
It was kind of a beautiful little thing that happened outside of all of that horribleness that COVID was.
Did you want to?
It was just this perfect, weird, perfect timing where we just got to focus on it. We used Zoom. Zoom was like the new thing. So like Mikey is based in New York, so we could never meet with him in person anyway. So it was kind of, you know, perfect that like I said, just timing was great. And we hunkered down and wrote the new version of the show in like, what, a year?
We rewrote Act One in about 6 months.
6 months, yeah.
Did a reading of that and then rewrote it again in a year.
See, a lot of people want to put a lot of, you know, life was horrible. They won't. Humanity, I feel our culture wants to look for the negative in everything.
Sure.
It's refreshing to hear both of you sit here and say, you know what? It's,
something positive did come
out of this. Something positive came out of this, and this is something that was going to continue to evolve, that you're going to continue to work on. Anything that you want to say in closing, this is your chance now to bait the hook and reel them in. Anything you want to say to the listeners who maybe you've piqued their interest? Now it's time to knock them off the fence and into the Buckley Performing Arts Center either this Friday or Saturday.
That's so much pressure. I would just say, you know, please come. You know, we value your eyes and your ears. And the more people we get to see it, the more impact we will make in the long run, and just support local creatives and local art.
Eli,
I think our show has a little something for everyone.
Yeah, that's
right. We've got three different stories that I think you can follow, and I think everyone any age will find something to latch on to.
Yeah, and if you're a social media person, check us out on Facebook at Hallie's Comet, a new musical, and Instagram at Hallie's Comet _musical.